What do you want to ask about what we've talked about so far, or what do you want to bring in that we haven't discussed yet? Yes.
I read an article, or can you delineate, or whatever, fear and anxiety, they're two different words, but they're kind of the same thing, or not?
Fear and what?
Anxiety.
You know?
Okay, so let's do a little experiment. You're welcome.
I'm activated, so.
Is that fear?
So yeah, I don't know. So yeah, I'm feeling fear and anxiety.
Okay. How do you know?
Well, I don't know, because that's why I just asked you the question.
Okay, so pause there. So that was a really lovely demonstration of our habit of looking for somebody outside of ourselves to be the authority on an experience inside of ourselves.
Yes.
And that is a massive cultural habit.
Yes.
So I want to help all of you undo that for a moment. So bring to mind, this is not going to be fun, I'm sorry, but bring to mind a time when you have felt afraid. Just take a minute and think about a time when you have felt afraid. I actually noticed this the other night when I was watching Criminal Minds, and I discovered that my entire body was in a freeze response. And then I thought, why do I do this to myself? This is very unenjoyable. So think about a time when you have felt afraid. Just play that in your mind. Think about that situation. And then track what's happening in your body as you're thinking about that situation. What you'll sometimes notice is that when you get present to it, when you begin to just get present to a fear state, some of you might notice your body is actually relaxing into that. Because the act of getting present to it resources you. But if you can just go back a moment, if your body did relax with the quality of your presence, which is lovely, but if you could play that fear and you could track what's going on in your body, what are the things you notice happening physically when you're in a fear state? Yeah.
Body tension.
The muscles of your body will contract. And they'll contract in different parts of your body depending on your own patterning, but you may find all sorts of ways in which your body contracts and tenses up. So track for a moment, do you have a sense, do you have enough body awareness yourself to know where in your body the patterns of tension lie, or do you feel disconnected from where the patterns of tension are in your body? That's a rhetorical question. But it's a little bit of a self-assessment. What else do you notice when you're remembering something that made you afraid, or when you're imagining something that evokes a fear state? What else does a fear state feel like in your body?
I get a headache and I get nauseous.
Some people get a headache and they feel nauseous.
Hyper alert.
Okay, and how does that show up in your body? You just did it.
Yeah.
Okay, do you see what happened? It's not only tension, it's also an uprightness.
Yeah.
Do you see how it sort of pushes your spine up, and there's a bracing against what might come next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That can happen for some people. What are other things you're noticing?
Increased heart rate.
Your heart rate gets higher. This is one of the ways that this happens with anxiety too, but we'll get there.
I get cold
too. Mm-hmm. Some people find that their hands get cold or their feet get cold. Yes.
Palms sweat.
Palms are sweating. So there's a lot more. I won't go into everything, but your body is having a physiological response to fear. The next question is, how aware are you of your body's response? Are you connected and aware of what's happening in your physiology, or do you tend to stay in your thoughts? Where is your attention? So many of us were not trained to know what's happening in our bodies. We were trained to cut off from what's happening in our bodies and go into our minds. And that's one of the ways in which we find the discussion about feelings really confusing, because our mind isn't feeling. It's trying to learn about feeling, but it isn't the same thing as dropping into feeling. So you can begin with sensations. Okay, now I want you to think about a situation. It's also fear. They're obviously related, but there's a qualitative difference. Think about something that causes you great anxiety. Okay, when do you have a lot of anxiety coming up? Now, what are you noticing in your body when you're anxious? Yeah.
This is a belief that, I don't know if that's body, but I notice with anxiety, my self-worth lessens.
Okay, so do you see what your body just did? With anxiety, I do a little of this. Okay, my shoulders hunch, my gut pulls in. It's like a hedgehog, I wanna
protect.
Right. Okay, so that's how we know. The belief I put to that is my self-worth, blah, 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 blah. This is about self-worth. But the physiological response is one of this. Okay. What else do you notice with anxiety?
Broader. It's not as precise.
How do you know? It's not as precise. How do you know? What's happening? How do you feel?
More, I don't know. It's more agitated. It's not as strong, it's just broad.
It's got a more diffuse electrical feeling.
Yeah.
Is that helpful language?
Yeah.
It's got a little bit more electricity.
It's, for me, I think I just, like, it's a fear of unknown danger.
Yeah.
Like, the fear is like...
I can attribute it to that. Yes. Yes. Anxiety is a little bit more electrical and scanning. Yes? And it's got a bit more trembly and shaky. Does this make sense to people? Okay, that's much more useful data. And each of you may feel it differently, but the useful data is what's happening in you. So when we're talking about, is this a feeling of this, or this is a feeling of this, what I would do is I'd say, what are you noticing in your interiority? And as you begin to notice what's happening in your interiority, you'll discover a bunch of things. How much can I tolerate feeling that? If I tolerate feeling that, how much do I start judging that? Because if I start judging it, I won't want to be present to it. Judging it is actually a way of escaping it. Okay? Or thinking about it is a way of trying to bring order to a chaotic internal experience in order to get relief. And there is a lot of research out there that when we begin to name and take the diffuse felt sense experience and give it a word and give it an organization, our nervous system settles. That is a way that we genuinely are helping ourselves. We just don't want to foreclose on the experience of feeling it and then understanding what comes with the feeling. So another thing you're going to notice is when you bring presence to your own internal felt sense, it will change. Some things that commonly happen, I begin to pay attention to a feeling and woof, it's gone. All of a sudden, there's no feeling and I feel like I'm out here. Isn't that interesting? Or I bring presence to a feeling and it intensifies and turns into a new feeling. Or I bring presence to an internal state, and as I bring my presence to it, it kind of releases and lets go and changes into something else that's more pleasant to feel. All kinds of things can happen, because feelings are not static events. They are life energy moving through you. What they need is compassionate presence and the ability to track and be with. And our cultural habit is disconnect, analyze, pathologize, control, and judge it. So we want to reduce that response and increase this other response. How's that landing on you, Bill?
Well, it sounds like you just said my middle name there with all those words. Like, wow, I'm going to have to get a new card. I like the delineation of between fear and anxiety, because if fear was more central adrenaline, and then anxiety is more kind of like diffuse. And then I understand I default to pathology to not experience that. And then what I've learned, the sense of urgency is is not a helpful thing either. So I have a sense of urgency to pathologize, da-da-da-da. And I've heard through you is talk slow, breathe, meditate. So why do we, or why do I have this sense of urgency? Is that just because I just don't want to experience this adrenaline?
It's unpleasant to experience, and your mind would like to organize for it for you very quickly so that you can get relief.
Okay, so that's kind of what
it is. And quickly can be a problem.
It is.
So you want the relief, stay with the relief, and get rid of the demand that it happened on your time frame. You know, hold the vision of, I want some relief around this as true, and then practice just being with yourself without judgment. So the concrete practice in nonviolence is we observe what's happening, we feel our feelings, we connect the feelings to the need that is underlying the feeling, instead of going up into our mind to ask, why am I feeling? Unless you're going to answer it with, because I have a need for. We connect the feeling to what am I longing for? What is the deep need that I have? Oh, it's for safety. It's for predictability. It's for mattering. Oh, I get it. This is the thing that's driving this experience. And then we hold those needs as precious information about actions we can take to make our lives better. And in making our own lives better, we trust that we are also making other people's lives better, that this is not a selfish act, but an act of community service. Because what I want for me, I'm wishing for all beings. And if I'm not doing the work of embodying it myself, why would any of you? And if none of you, if there haven't been other people who are doing it that I could learn from, how would I ever learn it? Like, we help one another in this way. We can't learn something we haven't experienced.
One of the things that we were talking about and sort of referred in a little bit of a way to what you shared with us about your own experience going back, and then I don't know if the word is healing or working with those feelings that you have, is that when we have a traumatic experience in our childhood, how do we process that abandonment or whatever that is? Where do we go in terms of those feelings from back then?
It's a super complex question with a very complex answer. Because you're wanting to think about developmental stage at which the trauma happened. So if it's trauma that happened to an infant, or a 2-year-old, or a 5-year-old, or a 10-year-old, or a 17-year-old, the path to healing and what might be needed could look really different. So that's one piece. The second piece is the context around which it happened and the meaning that got made is really, really important too. And then oftentimes things like this happen in the context of a relationship, and who the players were in that relationship is going to matter too in terms of what is going to actually be the healing factor now as an adult. Does that make sense? Okay. And then the other piece is, what is salient in my life now? That why would this need to be healed now? Why is this piece lingering? Something, a lot of things have happened to us that don't come up as needing healing. Like they've gone into the banks of memory and they've had some impact, but they don't come up as something I need to go back and unearth. So what is it about this thing coming up now at this point in my life? And then I want to find out, to what degree, what can I do for myself? Which is a good inquiry. But we forget in the West, mostly, that wounds happen in relational fields and they are healed in relational fields. And there's a lot of healing that we don't do alone. If I had a terrible experience with someone, I need 15 happy experiences with someone else to counterbalance that one terrible experience. Like it's got to be a lived experience in a relationship. Otherwise, it doesn't install fully. It's just an idea. And my whole system isn't fully on board because it's just this part of me that now thinks differently. But that's not powerful enough to get all of my engines pulling in that direction. I can help myself a little bit, But I also want to seek out relationships with people who are able to give me the thing that I never got and that I am not yet able to give myself. Is that helpful or not?
Really helpful. And maybe just one question. If you seek out those people, then are you needing those people? Like, are they filling in the gap? So
yeah.
Like, and
it
then does that abandonment or whatever that issue is come right back up when they aren't there?
Okay, so
you don't have the time, you know.
Ideally, that's exactly what should happen. You go and seek out somebody who's going to set you up, and then you have a replay of the pain. And then that person who set you up and replayed the pain responds differently to you in the presence of the pain than what happened before.
Wow.
So that it can be metabolized.
Or you do something different.
Or you do something different.
Wow.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So this is another reason why I say, we were just talking about this at the beginning, like, we don't want the world to suddenly not evoke our pain. We do want our pain to get evoked. We do want to get triggered. There's nothing wrong with getting triggered. There's nothing wrong with people getting angry. There's nothing wrong with people accessing their hurt. There is nothing wrong with having those feelings triggered. Where we get stuck is when I make the mistake of thinking I caused your pain, and I'm therefore responsible for your pain, and therefore I've done something wrong, because my heart will close and I will move away. At the time when that person needs me to open my heart and move in. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And in order for me to have the capacity to open my heart and move in when you're in pain, I need to have resolved enough of my own pain. So that's why it's much easier for me to go seek out a therapist who can help me with my father issues than my father, who will never help me with those issues because he will reenact them with me until he's done his own healing, which he's unlikely to do. So I can learn to, this is back to your question, I can learn to accept, Dave, you asked about acceptance and letting go. I can learn to accept my father for who he is and let go of needing him to be different. Because there are other people who can help me heal the legacy that I inherited. But if I think that he's the only one who can do it, then I'm going to put a lot of energy into insisting that he be different. And we'll reenact the same thing. But there are lots of other people who can give me the thing that I needed, and I go and find them. Yeah. More questions on that? Or okay. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I experienced coming out of a good Irish Catholic background is a constant, I feel something, and then a constant, no, you can't feel that, or a belief system that makes me doubt and question all of those feelings, and the coping mechanism that goes along with it is just to shut it off.
Yeah. So there's a belief system, no, you can't feel that, that got developed because the people around you didn't know how to feel your feelings. So they needed you to shut your feelings down because they didn't know what else to do with it. It was their best way of helping you help yourself. We don't do that here. We don't feel. Make them go away. We want to be nice people who don't have all these messy feelings. Okay? So we learn that. And when we're little, we don't have a lot of choice to say, no, I'm going to question this belief system in our family. Like, when I'm 5, I can't do that. I don't have the capacity to do that. I absorb it. And then I learn a lot of implicit things. And as an adult, these implicit rules that I grew up with operate under the surface. They're like the software in the system. And then, luckily, cultures evolve and change, and we bump up against other cultures, and then some people are in cultures where you can feel all the time, and then we have this bumping. This is cultural diversity at its best. We bump up and we go, what? In your family you're allowed to cry? What? You can be angry and not like destroy a relationship? Like, what is the strangeness? And then we have an opportunity that now we're suddenly aware of a new way of doing it, a new way of being, and then we have an opportunity to do something with it or not. So in this case, I would say if I have a belief that I I'm not allowed to feel, or I can't feel that, I can start questioning and working with it. What would it be like to feel more? Do I want to do that or not? What would it be like to practice feeling with this person who's really in touch with their feelings and isn't going to get so scared when my feelings come up? What if I notice that you're not scared of my feelings? So do I need to be scared of my feelings? I'll give you something that happened just this morning. I was talking with Terry, and I've been re-listening, like the recording that I sent out on the newsletter this week, I had been re-listening to this, and at the end of that recording, I couldn't remember exactly what the context was of the discussion we had had, but Terry was asking me questions. He was like, yes, but what about? And I was like, well, what's wrong with how people feel, and what's wrong with, you know, this and that? And I, on the re-listening of it, I was sitting in my study and I was listening to this and I was thinking, oh my God, Yvette, how could you say that to someone? Like, this is what I was thinking in re-listening to the recording. And I thought, oh, how do people put up with you? Like, this is so, you were so rude to Terry, you know, like, he was asking you a legitimate question and you were just like bantering, like, how disrespectful. And so I had all of these judgments about the way that I had handled that. And I said it to Terry this morning. I was just sharing because he was very gracious in how he had, on this recording, like, oh, he was so gracious with me as I was being so, like, provocative. Why was I being so mean? And when you said to me this morning, oh, but it was some version of what I took from it. I know you had slightly different words, but you said something like, oh, but I enjoy that about you. I love this part of, you know, playing and bantering. And, you know, in this moment, as we're talking about this, I know that in my own family system, Tim, that would have been seen as defiant. That would have been seen as questioning the authority of somebody else, and I would have been smacked down. And even listening to it, that old part of me of, like, it's not safe to banter and be playful in that way, came up, and I was like, what happens to me when I'm in that room? Like, I was clearly fine doing it then, but on listening to myself doing it, I have all these judgments and fears coming up about what I was doing. And it was really helpful then for you, a man, by the way, an older man, to say to me, I love that about you. I can work with that in you. It doesn't injure me. It doesn't create any, you know, like, that was actually a little moment of healing for me this morning, to be like, oh, a bigger part of me can show up with other people. There are some people who don't like that and don't want that, but there are people who do. And those become my new playground. So thank you for that, by the way. A little moment of healing.
But you really offended him when you called him old.
I know, I know. But I am. I mean, we've got to embrace that too.
She's done it before. She's so young.
I know. It's my youngness that just gets in the way of my wisdom, my folly of my youth.
You actually called him older.
Older, yes, not old.
Good.
I'm happy to hear that, yes.
Just another layer. I think the fear of feeling also in that scenario, it's not just feeling like you're defiant, but it's you're going to be damned. It is a huge judgment. And I think there's a lot of shame associated for me to get back in touch with feelings because it's tied to this really deep belief that to believe that means you're going to burn in hell. You're a sinner. You're a whatever. And the pervasiveness of that, you know, in a family system and for me as an individual has been Herculean.
Yeah, it's so inhibiting. It's so inhibiting, and it's designed to put you at war with yourself. And remember that domination systems, whether they're religious or political or governmental or whatever you want, a domination system needs to get people at war with themselves, because people who are at war with themselves will be compliant and easy to control. If you are spending all of your energy fighting with yourself, there's not a lot of energy left to fight the thing that's actually getting you to fight with yourself.
Can you see that again?
It's there. If you're fighting with yourself, you don't have a lot of energy for making change in the world. You can't look out, you can't, you know, so this is the inverse of what I was saying earlier today. But we begin to think we're the problem, and so we don't actually see what the problem is. We begin to think that our nature is the problem, and so we don't have any energy left for actually looking at where the problem really is. Which is often in a toxic belief system based on privileging the few and controlling the many. So one more thing that I want to say about that is, this is lifelong work that happens in micro moments over time, and it's long work. It's not like going and getting your teeth cleaned. You know, it's not like you make an appointment, you go in, you take care of it, and now you're good for 6 months. This is like daily, lifelong work of what's coming up, what's coming up, what's coming up. It's a way of being in the world. Yes?
I'm just struck by an amusing, like, universality of human suffering moment, where, like, I'm relating so much to what you're talking about, this Irish Catholic family and the feelings of it, except mine is, like, being raised by scientists. So, like, I was taught that, you know, the only good way to perceive the world is objectivity.
There you go.
Subjectivity is, like, that's, you are going to do bad science, your experiments aren't going to give you, you're going to be wrong. And it's like, that's my version of being damned, is doing bad science. But it's, like, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Do you go to hell, though? Well,
you definitely...
No, you just go into non-existence.
You don't get tenure, come on.
Yeah. You become invisible and you cease to exist.
Yes.
No one will read your research.
It's just, you just don't matter. Like, if all you bring to the table is subjective, we throw that data out.
What would it be like if you decided right now that you matter and your feelings matter? I mean, how would your life change if you simply decided that your subjectivity matters and your feelings matter? And not as a tool of domination, not to control anyone else or make anyone else be like you, but just that you absolutely, fundamentally matter, and your subjective experience matters and how you're feeling matters just to you. How would your life be different if you lived from that place?
For me... My life is different because of that, because of you know, also being raised in a very strict Irish Catholic family with a very authoritarian father. It just was, you know, I didn't have any control over it, it just was.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me now, it's just what NBC has given me is the acute and high awareness of what am I feeling and what am I needing in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. And it's yes, there's mourning, but there's also celebration for me of, wow, I am, like, happier than I've ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more aware. I'm joyful. I'm, you know, and yes, do things pop up that I wasn't aware of all the time, but it's more of that acceptance of, oh, and we were just talking about this, oh, look, I caught myself at not being aware. Isn't that interesting? As opposed to the shame and blame of, I'll never get this right, et cetera. So for me, it's that awareness of feelings and needs has been amazing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like reclaiming a lost part of ourselves so that we can become whole again.
Yeah.
It's not about making what we already have online bad, but it is about filling in the gaps with what we weren't able to develop fully until now. Yes, and then yes, and then yes.
So I was talking to a person about this and about how I'm not attached to my feelings and how difficult it is, and they were just from a totally different, the opposite family, where they said, please, I just have so many feelings. And I was like, huh, what would that be like?
Uh-huh.
And she was having, it was like the same same problem.
Yes.
Having too many feelings.
Yes.
And
some of us need to learn containment.
That a little
yeah. Well, I swing a little in the Midwest towards, like, expression being a more culturally needed thing. But in some cultures, what we really need is a lot more containment. So remember that the sweet spot is sort of in the middle, and you can swing out to any polarity. There's always going to be an opposite that is equally, you know, so the, you want to get into this place of balance in the middle. Make sense? Yeah. Yeah, I can be way inhibited or no inhibitions. Neither of these are ideal. I could be completely repressed or just unbridled self-expression. Neither of these are ideal. Okay, we really, we want to be able to calibrate. Yeah.
So to answer your question, what would it be like?
Yeah.
Just like accept that I matter, my feelings matter. It's actually one of the biggest growth edges for me because I have some sort of like story or just feedback from others maybe that that comes at a cost of other people not mattering as much. Or like the time I take for myself or loving myself, giving my feelings space. It's challenging to integrate that with I matter and you matter.
It is challenging, right? I mean, we're gonna like, if you think of a seesaw or one of those balls that you stand on where you have to sort of stay in the middle, otherwise you're gonna tip off or whatever. Each of us will have in different situations either a tendency to matter more than others or to matter less than others. And so you begin thinking about under stress, under fear, what is your pattern? To privilege everybody else and I need to make myself smaller, or to be like, oh, wait a minute, all of you, hold on and make yourself bigger. Like what's your default? And it'll be different with different people. And then what you're trying to do is bring yourself a little closer to center where you are able to integrate both perspectives. Where I can really stay in touch with my subjectivity. I can bring my subjectivity fully online. I know what I'm perceiving. I know what I'm observing. I know what I'm feeling. I know all the judgy things that I'm thinking. I know my preferred strategies. I know what needs are driving them. I know the urgency with which I want to exert control and demand that it all go like such and such. And I also know what kind of request I can make in this moment that brings this forward in a way that would meet more needs. I bring that online. And I also have the capacity to take the perspective that any one of you could have a whole different set of subjectivities, and how can I now include them in the conversation, in the dialogue, in a path forward? But it is a practice, because we're not used to the practice of holding the both and. We're used to the practice of splitting and othering. Me or you, us or them. This or that. We're used to that way of being, and we're practicing our way into me and you, us and them, this and that. We're practicing our way into an integrated way of living, not a fragmented way of living. And it's hard. I'm totally with you.
Psychotherapy and things are getting worse. Mm-hmm. And that that's been sort of hovering in all the self kind of like indulgent, like tromping around in my interior landscape stuff that I absolutely love and hate. That this thing about people at war with ourselves are compliant and easy to control. Mm-hmm. There's a piece that just got really, really big about the political act of sitting in this circle together. Mm-hmm. And linking up, and when you talked about your ancestral trauma, or Tim, when you're talking about the relationship between this church that positioned itself at the intersection between us as individuals and our deepest spiritual knowingness, it's there's something that's beginning. I'm seeing the interconnectedness of these different patterns, and seeing this as a political act.
Mm. It is. I agree with you. That resonates with me. I do see it as a political act, but it's a radically different one than the one we're used to seeing. Yeah.
In part because it supersedes the kind of definitions of left, right, you know.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. It just takes a very. It goes to the higher level, like you know.
Mm-hmm.
It pushes it.
So in this moment, check in with yourself right now. How are you feeling? What's stirring? What feels salient to you? Where is your mind going? What images? What's happening in your body? What's feeling meaningful to you? What's feeling stimulating to you? What's feeling challenging to you? And I want to, before we move into a big closing, what I'd like to do is get you into groups of three or four. I'd like each of you to take about 30 seconds to just let the group, your group, know what's stirring in you right now. And then I want the other two or three people in the group to do some empathy guessing. Are you feeling because you're needing? Are you feeling because you're needing? Are you feeling because you're needing? And then I'd like you to switch roles. Have the next person check in a little bit, share where they're at, what's stirring, what's going on with them. Have the other people make a few guesses. Are you feeling because you're needing? Are you feeling because you're needing? Are you feeling because you're needing? Move to the next person. I don't want more intellectual discussion. If you can help yourselves from getting there, I want you to just drop down right now and get a quality of presence with one another where you can reveal what's happening for you and then practice meeting whatever somebody is revealing with deep presence to what they're feeling and what needs are alive in the circle in that moment, present moment. Okay? Off you go. Whatever groups you like, yeah.